Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lab podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today we've got Lando Norris, a McLaren Junior driver, as a guest, and we'll review the second week of Formula One testing in Barcelona. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Today we have a very special guest on our podcast. We are honored to have Lando Norris with us. Lando has dominated every series he has entered, winning the World Car Championship as the youngest driver ever, and last year both Formula Renault 2.0 championships. He has been a sim racer for a couple of years and is praised as a big talent in the F1 paddock. So, yeah. Last year must have been a very satisfactory year for you, Lando. I mean, plenty of wins, and at the end of the season at the Autosport International Awards, you picked up the BRDC McLaren Young Driver Award, a real prestigious winning. Would you say that 2016 has really been one of your best years in racing?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously winning... I guess three main championships in 1 year, as well as being a rookie in all three of them, and then topping it off with the McLaren Autosport Award Young Driver win. Obviously, that was pretty much the kind of the icing on the cake to what had already been an amazing year, better than kind of I expected. Although, you know, the plan was to go out and win that season in kind of Renault and TRS, you know, even if I finished second, it would still would have been pretty good. But winning all of it pretty much will be my best season in car racing for a few years. You know, I'm not doing as many races, or only doing one championship this year, but. Yeah, it was definitely an amazing season and my best yet.
Yeah, so speaking of that championship this year, that is, of course, the European Formula 3 Championship. How are you feeling heading into that season?
I'm pretty confident. You know, it's going to be hard going up against, you know, more experienced drivers. You know, we're going to... tracks I've never been to before, whereas, you know, the majority of the drivers in the championship have, and it's a car that kind of the more you do in it, the better you become and the more confident you become with it. You know, very few drivers have come in and won in their first season of FIA F3. So, you know, if I could end up winning the championship at the end of the year, that would be it. Really would be amazing, but it's going to be very tough. A lot tougher than what Renault was last year. You know, there's a lot more drivers who are at a more competitive level, and going, you know, with Carlin, a team, you know, I've been with for the past 2 years. They're a team obviously I know very well. And kind of say feel at home with, but you know they haven't had the best kind of last few years in Formula 3. But you know you would have thought the obvious choice was to go with Prema or possibly Hi-Tech or something. But I feel very confident with the choice we made with Carlin. I think we've made some good steps. With the team and with myself and with the car over the winter. So, I'm looking forward to a good start to the season.
All right. You said that it's going to be a step up from what you had until now. Would you say you said that the drivers in F3 are more competitive? Would you say it's really the drivers that makes the series really as competitive as you said, or is it also challenges of the new car?
Well, I think you know, drivers are one. You know, there's the few drivers which have been doing it for two or three seasons already, like Gunther or Ilott. So it's going to be very tough to kind of beat those drivers. Going to some of the tracks I've never been to before, like Poe or Zandvoort or or Nürburgring. So, you know, that's one part of it. I think the racing is pretty hard in F3. I'm not too sure about this year. Obviously, like you said, there have been a few changes with the aero packages. So we'll have to wait and see what they're like. Yeah, maybe it makes the racing better. It could make the car harder to drive, easier to drive. I'm not too sure, but you know, if it does make the racing a bit easier and you're able to kind of follow people around the corners a bit closer, I think then it'll be very good. I think the racing can be a bit of an improvement, because really it's pretty difficult to follow from my experience of Macau and Hockenheim. It's quite hard to follow very closely, as it was in Renault, but not as much. You know, Renault was obviously, they're both a one make series, so car wise I think it's pretty similar. You know, there's not a huge amount you can do, especially this year with F3. They've limited more of the things you're able to change with the car, so hopefully that makes the racing even closer, and obviously that makes it even harder. So I think that's another reason why it's going to be by far the hardest season yet. You know, the combination of all of that is plays a big part.
Yeah, quite interesting. Also to hear that the problem of following other cars, we talk about it a lot in Formula One, that it also translate down to the junior series. It's quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, it's, you know, even from Formula 4, and my first season in single seaters, you already get kind of used to it there, and it's obviously a very hard thing to kind of, I don't know how you would be able to get rid of it, apart from having kind of just no downforce at all in the car. it's something I think you just have to get used to. You know, when you get close to a driver, especially if he's like you know, maybe half a tenth slower, it's almost impossible to overtake unless you really force him into a mistake, or you know, you make a risky maneuver from a long way back or something. It is pretty difficult to really follow closely, and that always makes the racing slightly worse. But yeah, maybe this year with the new front wings, it could make it a bit different. But it's something that happens, I'm sure, in all kind of single seater formulas, even in Formula 4, which is the slowest of them all, pretty much. So yeah, it's just something you have to get used to.
Yeah, and so Formula 3, you know, the European Championship, has become really prestigious. It always has been, I guess. And Max Verstappen and Lance Stroll are just recent examples of drivers who have leapt from that championship into Formula 1. So why do you think Formula 3 is a good way to prepare yourself for the pinnacle of motorsport?
I think, you know, you go to a fair amount of tracks, or a few which Formula 1 go to, you know, it's very tough as it is a one-make series. There's limited stuff you can do to the car, although there are, you know, things you can really change. But yeah, it makes it a lot more difficult, say, than Formula One. Obviously, there all the cars are different apart from just your teammates, and this is literally all one car. So whoever kind of beats the rest is better. Whereas you can kind of say in Formula One that you know, you can only, the main person you can really try to beat is your teammate, because that's, you know, that's the fairest way to kind of say you're better, is when you're in, you know, the same cars. So it's just a very good car to, you know, really maximize the aero that you have. Obviously you have a lot of races, so you get a lot more experience in the car. And there's, you know, I'm not driven a Formula One car yet, so it's a bit hard to say kind of what attributes can follow from F3 to Formula One. You know, the people to ask are like a Verstappen or Stroll. You know, they can give a much better example of what things are really like Formula One. But I'm sure just the whole general trying to push a car hard, especially, you know, it's a bit different with us being on Hankooks, which last as long as you want, basically, to compared to the Pirellis. Obviously, there's a very big difference. But you know, it's just from Formula Renault to Formula 3, it's another step in, you know, trying to learn how to use your aero efficiently. You know, really maximizing the potential of the grip that you have, and it's because it's so close, it really makes you not, well, you can't say not be, you can't ever be perfect, but really makes you be as accurate as possible. And that's something that you definitely need to learn for when you go into Formula One.
Yeah, sounds interesting. And I think it's, as you said, it might be a very good preparation there. Another thing that might be a good preparation, I don't know. You recently announced that you will join the Redline Sim Racing team. I think you are a sim racer, or you have been a sim racer for a long time now. And does it actually improve your skills, or what skills does it improve? Does it improve to check out the places where you can overtake other cars? I mean, we saw that video where Verstappen practiced that move around the outside of Planchimont. What is it? What you would say is, or what is the main benefit of sim racing, or is it just fun?
A lot of it is fun. I enjoy kind of just doing the races itself.
Me too.
And driving the different cars. It's hard. It's, you know, it's not the most, say, accurate thing to how you would drive a car in real life. Like a GT3, say, you know, you'd, in that you really have to push. And the best of the best makes a difference, because they're able to kind of just push that bit more in a couple of areas, and it pays off. Whereas in our racing, it's a bit of a different driving style, and you know, you have to be as smooth as possible, and not go over the grip. So I think it's good for, yeah, doing the racing. You know, you have damage and stuff, so you don't want to crash, and that makes you drive it like you would do in real life. You know, there's still no fear factor or anything, so
yeah,
it doesn't really matter if you do crash. But you know, if you go about it in the right way, you can race people and, you know, be fair and everything like that. And yeah, not iRacing so much. You know, that's not the best thing to learn everything. But you know, when I get to drive on the sim at McLaren, obviously it gets into a bit more detail with having to manage all the ERS, DRS, everything like that. It's slightly different. And like iRacing in the Formula One car, you know, you have to manage all of that stuff. You know, you've got to manage your tires a bit. You've got to definitely have to manage your ERS system. There's different ways of doing that on iRacing. So it's, you know, you can learn a lot of general stuff. How to make setup changes, what it does, but yeah, I guess overall it's a bit more for fun than anything.
Okay, so well, I tried some simulators like Automobilista and R Factor, and I tried iRacing. What would you say, or did you try other ones than iRacing? What would you say is the best one? Is iRacing the closest thing that would actually could be compared to reality?
I don't think so, because you know you have much more accurate models in, you know, you don't have like Red Bull and McLaren or Renault run iRacing. They have much more accurate models, which I think are based off of R factor.
Yeah.
So I think for physics, I think it's R factor. I've never driven like Automobilista. I've never driven that before. So, you know, a lot of people have said it's pretty good to drive that program. But you know, iRacing is very good for the racing. That's the strong part that it has compared to a lot of other things. You know, the graphics are good. You have like a not a career, but you know, you have to progress through your licenses, and you have to drive fairly. Whereas R factor, you know, the graphics really aren't great at all, and there's no kind of good way to go racing. You know, it's all seems a bit more complicated. Whereas iRacing is very simple, and you know, it's fun in the end. Really, there's not much you can take from that. And yeah, there's just a kind of a career path, and it makes you want to work for it. Whereas R factor, it's more for, I guess, learning tracks and stuff like that.
All right.
I know you're concentrating a lot on the Formula 3 season ahead, but as previously mentioned, you did win the Young McLaren Driver Award. And with that, you know, you will get to test a Formula 1 car, a McLaren car. So have you thought much about that?
Yeah.
And, you know, that must be really, really exciting for you.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, it's going to be the first time I'm going to get to drive a Formula 1 car, and that's kind of, you know, it's what I've worked, let's say, since I started racing, it's what I've worked towards. So it's definitely going to be, I guess, in some ways a dream come true to be able to race it, or not race it, but drive it. You know, I don't know which year car it's going to be, because I think they've had the one which is Palmer drove this last year. I think they've had that for a few years. So whether they change it to the McLaren Honda one, I'm not too sure. But yeah, I think it's definitely something I really look forward to. You know, I'm able to kind of prepare for it on the simulator now that I work with McLaren on that. So it's it's definitely, you know, a big opportunity for me to kind of learn as much as I can about Formula One and the car. You know, you don't do the most amount of laps, but you know, I think it's still like 15 or 20 in total, so you can really kind of get to feel the car and get to feel its limits and stuff like that. But yeah, I guess that's a bit of time away, and yeah, like you said, the concentration's on Formula 3 at the moment.
All right, so maybe he's talking a little bit about testing. I'm sure you're following that as well. How hard, as a McLaren guy, how hard is it actually to get the headlines minute after minute? not that hard, but well, day after day, that there are new problems with the power unit.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, before you kind of just before as part of McLaren, you just kind of see it, and you know, you still want them to kind of do well, but it's not something you're massively like interested. But now you're part of it, you obviously want them to do very well. And you know, they said they've made some good improvements for this year, but yeah, it does look like they're struggling a lot in the beginning of the season. Which obviously makes it very hard for the drivers, because it's just not as obviously enjoyable stopping every five laps or something. So yeah, it is hard for them. You know, it's not so hard for me, but let's say for when I possibly get the opportunity to drive, you know, you could say in some ways you've got to thank them for having to go through the pain of of really trying to make the McLaren Honda kind of partnership work. But yeah, I'm confident they'll get there. Yeah, I don't know how long it's gonna take for them to really be able to kind of push on the same level as Mercedes or Ferrari or Red Bull. You know, their aim was to be at that level for this year, but yeah, it's looking a bit tricky at the moment.
Yeah, I think as race fans, we all hope that McLaren gets back to the top as soon as possible. And yeah, I think we'll need to wait and see how it unfolds over the season. So yeah, at the end, we've got some kind of rapid fire questions for you. So quick question, quick answer. Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, in your opinion, what's the best racetrack?
Monaco.
good choice. DRS, yes or no?
Yes,
okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Wet or dry track?
Wet.
Okay, pole position or podium?
I'll say pole position, because you can always then eventually get a podium, but I don't know. Yeah, pole position.
Actually, good choice there. What's your best memory until now from your racing career?
Winning the McLaren Autosport Award.
I guess so, yeah. And what's the best song to listen to before racing? Or do you even listen to songs before racing?
No, I don't really. Sometimes I just, there's some music on in the track or something. But yeah, I don't have much of a kind of a pre-routine getting into car kind of a song list or anything. I kind of just do my warm up and then get in the car.
Okay, and last but not least, pizza or pasta?
Oh, pizza! Yeah,
good choice. of course, your career is, I'd imagine, aspiring to Formula One. So, if people want to try and follow you on that journey, on which social channel are you most active?
Mainly Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Obviously, I've got my website as well, so that probably gives the most info, the most updates. But for kind of more, I don't know really. All three are pretty similar. I kind of do a similar posts on all three, so there's a not a huge fuss on which one you go to follow. Obviously, Instagram is more just videos and photos, but both the Facebook and Twitter have their kind of promotions, and I had a competition not so long ago to win some signed gloves, which is obviously a bit harder to do on Instagram, but I guess Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are the three main ones.
Yeah, so great. So, Lando, thank you very much for being with us today on the Fastest Lap podcast. We'll keep an eye on your progress throughout the season, and we hope all the best for you.
Okay, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So, obviously, at the end of this episode, we want to talk about this week's testing in Barcelona, of course, and boy, oh boy, we already teased it in the interview with Lando Norris. It wasn't a good week for Honda, was it?
No, same old story, really, with them being unreliable. Not only unreliable, but slow. It's very unfortunate to say that, but, it's true. We all thought that this would be the year that McLaren would really come back and take it to the rest of the top. The top teams, but it's not looking very promising, and we're only emerging from preseason testing, so it's not looking very good for them at all.
Yeah, and the most scary fact was that they I think the most amount of laps, consecutive laps, was like 10 or something in testing, and I really ask myself how they want to complete the Australian Grand Prix. They need to turn the engine down to minus 10 or something. I don't know how that's going to work. I heard also stories that it's actually, or the problem is caused by vibrations of the engines, of the engine. Did you hear that as well?
Yeah, I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, so vibrations, is that's not really something, I'm not an engine guy, but maybe it's really due to the new characteristics of the Honda engine, and I'm not sure whether they can fix it that easily.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a strange problem that, it's basically vibrations that are just deteriorating everything else in the engine, which is a bit unusual. I'm not really sure what can be done. I'm not really an engine guy either, but at the end of the day, I'm just hoping that they can get something done and they can get something fixed and at least, somewhat competitive in Melbourne, because right now it's really looking like they're going to be right at the bottom of the field, even behind Sauber, perhaps.
Yeah.
That's the real worry right now. And not only is it a big team, but they also have two very, very good drivers. They have Fernando Alonso, who, coming to the final couple of years of his career, and supposedly he is. I mean, the majority of his career is definitely behind him, and yet he still wants that third title, and he's still good enough for it. But even though they've had a poor car the last couple of years, he's still shown that he can still perform. And they also have Stoffel Van Dorn, who is really, really highly regarded as a future success in F1, and I back that because I think he is a great driver, and it's a real shame to see them, even after in the third year with Honda, to have a car as poor as this one is.
Yeah, there were some some jokes on social media, of course, like now with Manor gone, there's one Mercedes engine free, so just put the Mercedes engine into the Honda. I think even with a retrofitted Mercedes engine, they would go further or faster or whatever. I mean, yeah, it's so sad that it's becoming funny, but yeah, we'll see what will happen in Australia. But I think already, I think it was Van Dorn, or was it Alonso, who said that Australia will actually be an extended test session for them. They will not go for performance there at all. So yeah, we will see. But one team that will definitely go for performance in Melbourne in Australia is Red Bull, and there are some rumors that they will actually bring a lot of new parts there to Australia. They had a filming day today in Barcelona. Do you actually think they will upgrade their car as much as some people think, or do you think they'll continue with that clean and basic design of Adrian Newey and just do some minor improvements improvements which are not maybe that visible to the eye and still make the car fast?
I think in today's filming day that they took part in, I'd imagine they fitted a lot of new parts onto the car, to away from any media eyes, and were just no real potential for any leaked images. I think they will, of course, have some bits onto the car for Melbourne. I don't think it might not be as radical as people think. They might not have, a lot of things, because I think adding too much in a very short space of time could be a bit risky.
Absolutely.
Maybe bit by bit they can add, because they might end up, putting, let's say, two upgrades on the car, and then the car performs well, and then when they add a third, it might hinder them. But if they add all three things at once, there's going to be a lot of debate over what made the car not as quick. You know, little things like that could make it risky to add a lot of things at once. But yeah, I do think that they will be adding some bits to the car, but then again, most teams probably will be, because there would have been a lot of testing of different bits in Barcelona, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see who brings what and who adds the most amount of parts to their car. But yeah, definitely Red Bull will be looking to challenge right off the bat in Melbourne, especially Daniel Ricciardo, seeing as it's his home race.
Absolutely. And yeah, Ferrari, of course, fueled the hopes of the Ferrari fans with Kimi putting in a 1:18.6 or something, I think, at the last day of testing. Yeah, I think we cannot interpret it. We cannot read anything out of those testing times. But what do you think out of the second week of testing? Any team that really surprised you, or anything we can learn?
Well, I mean, it's always hard to learn from preseason testing. That's always a given. Yeah, but Ferrari, for example, looked. Yeah, I mean, they look decent enough, and I think, you know, Kimi probably could have went a bit faster. He never he was never going to push the car to the absolute limit, and he probably lifted off in a few places like Vettel was doing, but nevertheless it was a good lap. You know, we didn't really see what the Mercedes can do, what the Red Bull can do, so it's hard to judge whether Ferrari are ahead of Mercedes, behind Mercedes, you know, even further behind Mercedes. You know, it's really all out in the open right now. But one thing I do think is possible from testing is that the top three is more or less Red Bull, Mercedes, Ferrari. I think when we came into the season, into preseason testing, before any running was done, that was really the expected order. And I think, yeah, I think that is the order, because the only other team that really has the budget like they do is McLaren and Renault. And I don't think, you know, both of those teams aren't really there yet. So I think those three will be the top three, but
and actually by quite a margin, right? I heard the Haas team said that they might be 1.5 seconds up to the midfield, which is scary.
I mean, it's scary, but if those three teams are, if they're 1 point seconds ahead of the rest, and they're still close with each other, then, you know, it wouldn't be too bad. Of course, you want the most competitive field you can. In an alternate universe, there's a Formula One paddock with 20 cars that go into a race, you know, with the potential to win. Of course, you know, that never happens in Formula One anyway. But if the top three are 1.5 seconds ahead of the rest of the field, and both the top three are very close to each other, then, you know, I wouldn't complain at all, because we'd have six drivers, you know, competing, which would be fantastic. But you come back to it. Another team that impressed was Williams, and Williams really impressed throughout the whole test. I think they look quick, and I think they're probably ahead of the midfield pack. Of course, like I said many times, it's hard to judge this early, but it does appear like they're the favourites to be ahead of the pack, or ahead of the midfield pack, which is fourth place, and they will be looking to retake fourth place from Force India. And yeah, they got a lot of mileage in last week, which is good for them, seeing as they missed out on a whole day on the first week, on the Thursday. But they got a lot of running in, and yeah, they had a much better week than the first week, so I'll be looking forward to seeing how they do throughout the season.
Absolutely, it'll be a very interesting first weekend in Australia. I'll be up, I'll watch it, but before that, we'll get how many episodes do we have before Melbourne?
I believe next week is the only episode. Yeah, so we'll be previewing that GP next week.
All right. So, yeah, thank you very much for listening, and also I hope you enjoyed the interview we had with Lando Norris. And if you did, we would appreciate a rating on iTunes. Really helps us out and helps people to find the podcast. So until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.